south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Okay, now, here's something that'll piss you off. What with all the crime and corruption, especially in certain parts of all big cities in Latin America, wait a minute, where do you live? Sound familiar? Down here, south of the border anyway, knowing the cops are useless, fat-ass slugs, sooner or later you realize crime pays. Now, if you look at all the crime-solving statistics throughout Latin America, just pick any country, let's say Peru, and now we're looking at government statistics printed in local Latin newspapers. Did you know that last year only about 8% of all homicides were solved in Peru? That means if you shot and killed someone or poisoned them or pushed them out of a plane, you got a 92% chance of getting away with it. So then how about violent crimes in Peru? Cases solved there, a 5% success rate. Robberies and assaults, 8%. Well, that means just two things, you know. Crime pays, and we know that it does up in the States too, especially when big companies, defense contractors, and your government is involved. Anyway, south of the border, what you can glean from those statistics are police, law enforcement, and the judicial system are absolutely useless. And that means down here, if you're somehow on the receiving end of a crime, you can bet it's not going to be solved. Not by local law enforcement anyway. Even though stupid, idiot, first world do-good governments have donated all kinds of law enforcement technology. Crime wagons, CSI labs, sophisticated camera systems, polygraph machines. It's all your wasted taxpayer dollars in the crapper when they send that stuff down here. I mean, some years ago when I was spending quite a bit of time in Honduras, every single day I'd drive past a government parking lot where there were five donated brand new fire trucks, never used, baking in the sun in the very same place with weeds growing around them for, get this, over 3 years. Then a year or so went by and I hadn't been in that area, and when I popped back through again, I saw those same fire trucks there, this time that fire engine red paint, now dull and covered in bird crap. A few windows broken and some tires gone missing. Now, I ask you, what do you think a brand new fire truck costs? $100, $150, $200 grand? Now, I'm not talking hook and ladders here. I'm just talking about, you know, your standard pumper. I'm guessing there was $1 million worth of idiot first world donations sitting there just rotting away. Why? Because the bureaucratic fools in charge of donating such gifts revel in the momentary feel-good flush of donating to a poor, underprivileged third world country. Then, after all the photo ops, it's out of sight, out of mind. Rarely is there any advanced training or maintenance budget provided either. But I digress. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So the point is, if you think you've been wrong down here and you're going to go to court and sort it out somehow, just note the wheels of justice or injustice, however you want to phrase it, roll very slowly. And often they just simply freeze up. So then, what do gringos and expats do to stay out of trouble and harm's way? Well, number one, stick to the neighborhoods and zones and districts that are safe. Every big city has a lot of those safe zones. For every big so-called dangerous Latin city, at least half or more of the physical area is fine to drive or walk around in. We're talking about in the daytime now. And when it's dark, well, who wants to walk around in any big city for any length of time at night? In the first or third world. Unless you're in a very high-end first-world-style district, and there's a lot of those down here, too. Now, I've mentioned these zones in past shows. They're called the Zona Viva or the Zona Rosa. You'll almost always find them in the high-end business districts where first-world hotels and upscale restaurants and discos are found. That's why, for example, if you land at the airport near a big Latin city and you say to the cab driver, take me to the Zona Rosa or Zona Viva, he'll know exactly where to take you, and you'll end up in an area that's usually pretty high-end, and you'll recognize a lot of the names of the hotels and stores because they're imported first-world franchises. Most likely, if you're just getting in, that's where your first hotel will be located, too. Unless, of course, you're a low-budget backpacker, and in that case, you'll probably be heading in the opposite direction. So good luck with that. Just remember, as it turns out in the rest of the world, too, how safe and secure you are depends a lot on where you choose to hang out and or live. which is why so many first world gringos end up living in guarded, gated communities where there are other people who are at least upper middle class Latin style. That would be middle class gringo style. That's why I also don't recommend expats and gringos set up housekeeping or live or buy in what are considered middle-class Latin neighborhoods or districts. What Latins call middle-class to us is more like white trash Carneyville up in the States. So it's best to learn that distinction early. Hey, I'm just telling it like it is. That's what they call middle-class down here. I mean, it's true, in a Latin person's mind, anyone down here in Latin America that has a new car or has whole house hot water, you know, where you have a hot and a cold faucet in each sink that actually function correctly some of the time, they're considered upper middle class or even rich. So a Latin's definition of middle class, upper middle class, and wealthy are quite different than ours. In fact, when you're talking off the gringo tourist trail, any Latin guy or gal who makes $1,000 a month or more is considered upper middle class. That would be dire, cat food eating, dumpster diving poverty for anyone up in the first world, right? But just remember, a guy making $1,000 a month or slightly more down here is paying probably no health insurance. He'll be paying no car insurance premiums for that 10 or 15 year old car. He doesn't have a dishwasher, he doesn't have a clothes dryer, he doesn't have air conditioning or any kind of furnace or heating in the house either. And remember too, he's probably paying about a quarter to a fifth of your food bill up in the first world. That's why Latins who make $1,000 or more a month are counting their blessings. Think of your own situation up north if you could suddenly subtract those payments. No AC or central heating bills, no car or health or homeowner's insurance to pay for. Then cut that food bill down by 4 or 5 times and tell me, how much would you be spending on your lifestyle? Probably more than $1,000 a month, especially if you like designer labels, Starbucks, and the occasional umbrella drink. But you get the idea. Now, where was I? Oh yeah, talking about crime and cops and law enforcement. Now, unfortunately, because everyone knows down here if you call the cops, almost nothing happens. Sure, they might show up a half hour, hour or two later, maybe even a day later. They'll take the information down, tell you they'll get on it right away, and ask you to spot them a couple gallons of gas. So if someone breaks your window and steals your stereo and your iPhone, good luck with that. Again, crimes like that will not happen in a guarded, gated community. Or even if you have a place out in the boonies, as long as you've got a nice fence and maybe a big Holland dog or two. Anyway, just recently, certain corrupt, lard-ass Latin governments have started to write some anti-crime legislation. And here's their latest moronic idea. Get this. A tax on individuals and businesses to finance public security. Wait a minute. Hasn't that always been job one for government? Public safety and security? I don't get it. So they want to gouge businesses and taxpayers because their law enforcement efforts are such pathetic failures. So then along that line, let's talk about the little country of El Salvador, Central America. Their Congress just passed a law taxing all companies and individuals with net earnings over $500,000 a year. The new law states 5% of all earnings over $500,000 a year will go into a public service security fund. Let me translate to English the name of this new law. It's called Law of Large Taxpayers Special Contribution to the Public Security Plan. Let me translate some more of this. It says, this new security plan will be implemented relating to governance, prevention of crime, and preservation of public order. Now, this law, which was passed on October 29, 2016, says the excess contributions will be incurred only by taxpayers who earn a net profit equal to or greater than $500,000 a year. And for the calculation of the tax, there'll be a rate of 5% applied on the total above that amount. Now, with El Salvador being the very first country to pass such a law, other Latin countries are salivating at the thought of implementing such a measure themselves. So then, how might this affect expat gringos? Well, I'd say it probably will only affect 1 and maybe 100, even 200 expat gringos, only the very highest of earners. Now, when I've spoken to a few of my expat friends that just might fall in that category, all they do is laugh. To them, that new law is just a joke. Why? Because these gringo expats learn to use SA corporations, often more than one SA corporations in various Latin countries, to shift and hide profits when necessary to be in the absolute lowest tax bracket. So, as one of these high-earning expats explained, he said, Johnny, none of us guys who are really in that bracket show a personal income of over, get this, $20,000 or $25,000 a year. All the rest of it, well, like he says, you just shuffle receipts around between SA corporations. That's what they're for. And the real trick, he says, is that no Latin country requires you to report outside income for tax purposes. Not like the U.S., where all sources of income from anywhere must be reported. As for doing business in Latin America, if you can arrange it so that your income is coming from an SA corporation in a country outside the one you're doing business in, well, it's not reportable and you pay no tax on it. Now, one of these gringo friends even said, if you or your company is stupid enough to report over $500,000 in net earnings a year, you're an idiot and you deserve to pay that tax. Then he said, who do those political numbnuts think they're fooling? After decades of corruption, they're going to do something honorable for a change? Use the money for its stated purpose? Nope, the Hydra will just grow another head, and they'll hire another battalion of lazy, malignant bureaucrats. Bottom line, don't get paranoid. Don't let it worry you. You're not going to get hit with that tax. By the way, most expat gringos who do work, ones that aren't on pensions or Social Security, have internet businesses or businesses off the books, so they generally pay little or no taxes at all. So why worry? Oh, and by the way, as expat Eddie said, if a gringo down here is making $500,000 a year or more, he doesn't need government law enforcement at all. He can hire his own army. That's what the narcos do. Okay, changing gears a little bit here. I am still getting emails from you guys about fluoride in Latin America. Some of you have heard that certain big Latin American cities are considering fluoridating their water. Well, you're a little late with that news because Buenos Aires, Argentina tried it just recently but closed the program down. It was a test, a pilot program that crashed and burned. So how'd that happen? Their so-called expert water treatment technicians could simply not maintain the so-called safe recommended level of fluoride in the water at 1 part per million. In fact, when fluoride concentrations were measured day over day, they were all over the place, so they had to discontinue the fluoride project. And you gotta admire them for that, a government project that didn't work, and they actually shut it down. Since when does that happen up in the first world, huh? Now, of course, I assume that most all you listeners out there know of the dangers of fluoride, and that the Nazis even used it to dumb down prisoners in concentration camps. It made them more docile and shaved off a few IQ points. Then, after the war, they migrated to the U.S. and ran for Congress. Just kidding. Well, not really. Now, fluoride is a toxic beast, and amongst all the other problems they have with it, it's very hard to keep that recommended 1 part per million level in drinking water. Turns out, the government line is at 1 part per million is supposed to protect your teeth, though most non-government researchers disagree with that. Now, at not much more than 1 part per million in the water supply, it causes brittle bones and dental fluorosis, which turns your teeth grayish black. Sexy, huh? So anyway, brilliant Argentine water chemists can't seem to keep fluoride in the proper range in the drinking water. Not that there's any real safe fluoride range, but that's another subject. Anyway, in Argentina, they pulled a pilot plan, which is good news. Meaning, if chemists can't do it in Argentina, which is one of the more advanced Latin countries, the other less developed Latin countries certainly won't be able to pull it off. Good news, right? Well, not so fast. Guess what? I know I mentioned part of what I'm going to tell you now in a show quite a few months ago, but there's an update and more to add. Now, unfortunately, in virtually every Latin American country, when you buy salt, table salt, you got fluoride included in the package. It says right on it. Contains yodo, which is iodine, and fluoride. In fact, the other day I was in a big grocery store and I couldn't find any salt at all that didn't have fluoride in it. How's that? So I headed over to the specialty food section in Walmart and bought some unadulterated Mediterranean sea salt. Yep, you can get that stuff down here. It's not that expensive. Maybe $3 for a pound. Okay, problem solved if you're a gringo or expat who doesn't believe in fluoridation in any way. However, that means if you're invited to dinner at somebody's house or you're out to a restaurant, you're getting bombarded with fluoridated salt with every nacho, taco, burrito, or Happy Meal. Oh, and by the way, there are two ironclad Latin culinary rules that every chef down here clings to. Number one, douse everything with hot sauce and chili peppers. And some doctors are saying that can be a very good thing for your health. That is, if you don't mind waking up at 3 in the morning with dancing hemorrhoids. Number two, It seems like every Latin cook and chef oversalts everything, and I mean everything. I've watched Latins put salt on mangoes, melons, apples, even in lemonade, and not just a little. Now, I've personally never been to a restaurant in Latin America where I didn't need a half a gallon of water about a half hour after I've eaten. Not to cool the hot peppers off either. Of course, that means you're getting doused with fluoride. Because, you know, Latin cooks and chefs certainly aren't using Mediterranean sea salt. Now, if you don't go out to eat too much, you probably won't get slow and stupid and suddenly get the urge to campaign for political office. However, for all you listeners who are going to bring babies down or perhaps start a family down here, or if you're into dairy products in a big way yourself, then you should pay attention to this. Turns out, in most Latin countries, you go into the milk and dairy products section of your local grocery store. If you read the labels, they'll be in Spanish, they're actually putting fluoride in dairy products. Whose f***ed up idea was that? They have to be following some kind of stupid UN guideline or World Health Organization mandate. You can't make this stuff up. They're the ones that insist on 65-plus vaccination cocktails for every young toddler in the first world. So, parents, how's that working out for you? How many Rain Men have you got at your neighborhood public school? So then, what can gringos and expats do about that? Well, if you really must have your dairy products, you could stop buying them at Walmart or the big Latin chain store supermarkets. Instead, you could head out to some of the medium and large-sized food markets where farmers bring their own dairy products in daily. In fact, there's a lot of ways around buying processed and tainted dairy products, I mean, tainted with fluoride, etc. Down here, there are countless thousands, if not millions, of small-time farmers. They're in no way endangered or extinct like they are up in the States. And they sell their very fresh products daily at local tiendas and mom-and-pop grocery stores nearby. Same thing goes for coffee and honey, too, which I mentioned on a previous show. The fact is, you can walk into almost any small mom-and-pop grocery store, especially ones out in the boonies or a little ways out of the city, and you'll see a lot of homemade one-off products like coffee, honey, and dairy products produced just within a few miles of that store. Yep, as far as food goes, in a lot of ways, it's still like the 50s and 60s down here, though they do have Costco and Walmart, of course. Oh, and by the way, people do ask on occasion, they say, Johnny, I notice Costco and Walmart are all over the place down there. Does that signal the imminent death of the mom-and-pop tienda? In a word, no. And why is that? Well, it's because of the transportation issue down here. Now, you know, 95% of the first world adult population drive cars, whereas only about 10 to 15% of the Latin adult population drive cars. So, down here in Latin America, you've got 80 to 85% of the population who have no transportation to go to the nearest Costco or Walmart, which could be 10 or 15 miles away. But mom-and-pop stores, there's one on every corner. And believe me, they're not like your mom-and-pop stores up in the first world, or what's left of mom-and-pop stores up there. You'll find all kinds of familiar and oddball food and herbal concoctions, some with funky handwritten labels on them. You know, since there's no FDA and government agencies breathing down your necks if you produce a local product, that means if you have the urge to make some kind of organic pre-digested jelly jam goo-goo or whatever, local mom-and-pop stores, even some of the big ones, just might stock it, especially if you have a good presentation and you're a gringo, so you will have a very nice presentation, right? Oh, and by the way, I've seen this too. Clever gringos who make products like that often make their own little display stands. Some even have little product pamphlets that are real attention grabbers. Heads and tails above anything else that's displayed in that store. However, if you're going for a local market, you have to have that signage in Spanish, right? The fact is, local stores love to have gringo products like that on display. It's that gringo advantage again, right? But remember, I'm talking about off the gringo tourist trail now. I think if you're living in Panama or Costa Rica, the novelty of that gringo effect is kind of wearing thin. As a Costa Rican neighbor of mine once explained, he said, "The problem is, in my country, there are way too many gringos with money and way too many costarricenses without." Okay, changing gears again. A lot of people send me emails saying, "Johnny, you talk about opening up bank accounts and SA corporations in Central America and in a lot of the less developed South American countries like Peru, Bolivia, and Paraguay. But what about opening up a bank account in a much more developed Latin country like, for example, Argentina or Chile? Not to mention, being that they're so far away from the mainland USA, they're really well off the gringo tourist trail. The fact is, you just don't meet too many expat gringos who've ever been to Argentina or Chile. So people ask, why not Argentina or Chile? When you look up the facts about them on the internet, you have to come to the conclusion that they're safer, more refined, and the people more cultured, educated, more first world than all the other Latin American countries combined. That said, you longtime listeners know why I don't recommend Argentina. So then, what about settling in as an expat and doing business in Chile? Well, first of all, almost everything in Chile comes at a near first world price, so let me start by saying, gringos who've been in Chile for a while like a lot of things about the place, but they do not like the banking. Number one, it's impossible for foreigners to open an account there if they don't have a Chilean residency or an SA corporation. So then, what if you're a non-resident and you want to make an investment in the country? You want to buy a place? You want to invest in a business, whatever? Well, first of all, that means you'll have to get a bank account, right? But if you don't have Chilean residency and would like to maintain a bank account to do some kind of investment, I mean, you're going to have to transfer money, right? Well, you can either do that through your Chilean lawyer or walk into a bank with your lawyer and say you have a very large opening deposit to make, let's say 50 or 100 grand. Oftentimes, that approach will work. And don't be surprised to receive a lot of conflicting information from bank to bank regarding opening accounts for non-resident foreigners, which is why it's always recommended to do that through your lawyer or have your lawyer set up an SA corporation for you. Then the SA corporation can open the bank account. Now, as opposed to other Latin countries, having temporary residency in Chile does not automatically mean you can open a bank account. However, if you drop a big chunk of dough in their lap, that's another thing altogether. Now, if you do get temporary residency, they will let you open an account called a Cuenta Vista, which is a small-time, tiny little account. They have a low limit on the deposits you can make and the maximum you can have in that account. That means you can only use it to pay small household bills and utility bills and such. Now, these are more like passbook bank accounts light. You can't transfer down thousands of dollars into an account like that. They just won't let you. But it is a foot in the door. It's a start. Now, in Chile, like most other Latin countries, once you've got temporary residency, it goes straight to permanent residency in a year or a year and a half. Then you can go to any Chilean bank and open a regular account. However, you're not going to get those great US dollar bank CD rates that I spoke about on previous shows. You might recall in many Latin banks, you could get 3, 4, 5, 6, even 7% interest on US dollar CDs. However, you can get those high interest rates if you open a premium brokerage account at one of those banks. The problem is, you see, you have to provide proof of income from around $4,000 to $8,000 a month to get one of those accounts, or load up the account with a minimum of, let's say, 400 grand. Yeah, I'm sure most of you've got 400 grand or so sitting around in a shoebox under your bed somewhere, right? Now, one thing a lot of people don't realize is that if you own a property outright in Chile and many other Latin countries, banks will lend you money against your property. Yes, the second, even third mortgage business is growing in leaps and bounds down here. Whereas 10 or so years ago, second and third mortgages just did not exist. Yep, it's that first world lag time factor. And soon, when the real estate bubble blows, those driveway chickens will come home to roost. So bottom line, if you don't want to wait a year or two or even more to get that permanent residency and start doing some real banking, you just do like so many expat gringos do and set up an SA corporation, and that becomes your shell, and it opens a bank account, buys property, whatever. Then, of course, you could become an employee of your own SA corporation too, which is an absolutely great way to minimize your taxes and provide many other great benefits that I really don't want to talk about right now on the radio. Though all of that is explained at my Latin Insider seminar. The next one's coming up in January 2016, so just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on the link that says Johnny's 2016 Seminar. Do consider coming on down, and you will learn all the nuances of bank accounts, SA corporations, residency, passports, renting, buying, building, the ins and outs of health insurance, doing business, and much, much more. Not to mention there's something down here you'll get that you'll never get surfing the internet up north. You'll instantly get a very friendly, knowledgeable network of people you can lean on when you finally come down and make your move. But where was I? Oh yeah, as far as gringos expatting to Chile, most other Latin countries are much less restrictive, meaning they're much more accommodating and welcoming to gringos. Now, speaking of gringos and expat foreigners with banking and brokerage accounts, here's an email update from our Canadian friend, Mr. PT, who lives part-time in Mexico. He says, "Hey, Johnny, a quick update. A few days ago, my Canadian broker sent me an email asking me to update my information for tax purposes. So I logged in onto the site, expecting it to ask me for routine verifications of my personal information, which it did. But then it sent me to a special U.S. tax form. Remember, now I'm a Canadian, where I had to state that I was not a U.S. citizen and had no dealings with the U.S. and had to check a box allowing them to share my name and my address with U.S. authorities. If not, they said, I may be subject to a withholding tax. What the F? I repeat, I have no dealings with the U.S. whatsoever. You know, it's time to start thinking more seriously about one of those SA corporations, I guess. So it seems to me like the long, hairy, hoary arm of the U.S. authorities is reaching out even to non-citizens, which makes the information that you share, Johnny, even more important. Keep updating us on all those good places to go south of the border, since up north, things are going all wrong. Signed, Mr. PT. Okay, Mr. PT, thanks for that. And PT stands for Permanent Traveler or Perpetual Tourist. I like that. In fact, it goes back to the 1970s to a guy named William Hill, a pseudonym, of course, who wrote a book called PT, the Perpetual Traveler. Remember that one? Guess I'm showing my age, huh? And you're right, Mr. PT. Nothing is going to change up north. In fact, it's only going to get worse. So you must consider expatting south of the border. Do get your residency going, and that, of course, will lead to a passport. And yes, get your SA corporation going, too. And you do need some very good, trustworthy advice, which you'll definitely get if you come to my Latin Insiders seminar in January. We'll help you get your plan B going for sure. Okay, now that we're getting close to the end of the show, I'd like to mention once again, I've got a YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and plug in the Expat Files or Expat Files, and you'll hear me along with a cool little slideshow. And again, do check out the new website run by Mr. John Galt himself, www.thenewexpat.com, where you can check out some great blogs, reports, and our favorite Latin American attorney, who's there and at your service to fill you in on all the legalities that involve gringos and expats. Do check it out. You'll be happy you did.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.